This episode of the Educated Ignorance Podcast is brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Subscribe to the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of The Data Lab with Professor John Bush and Dennis Mickelson, as well as new episodes every week of Card Subject to Change, our new wrestling podcast with CZ and Nick. And three times a week, releasing episodes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, the Educated Ignorance Podcast. On Mondays, you will get full breakdowns of the Sunday night football game, as well as a couple quick-hitting topics from some of the NFL action on Sunday. Tuesday will be a quick-hitting reaction of the Monday night football game, as well as a full slate review of the Sunday games, the biggest and broadest topics from the weekend of football, as well as some college football stuff. And, of course, that Tuesday will be the Elite Eight episode each week for the NFL season, where we reveal the top eight teams, according to myself, in the NFL. And then on Friday, we will be releasing each week a big kind of preview for the weekend's games coming up, as well as the Sinister Six podcast every week with Mac Fulton. He will be joining us every week for the Sinister Six, a joint venture of NFL games and college games throughout the year. Our best six picks of the weeks. We will also have some betting stuff in there as well, against the spread, over-unders, things like that. So stay tuned for those three episodes a week of the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. America as a nation, we are back. Football, well, I guess technically was already here, but listen, we're at a point where it's like we're thriving for this content, and it is here. We are thrilled to have the NFL back in our lives, and that is where this podcast is starting today, is the NFL. And then we are then moving on to the Sinister Six. We have Mac join us to close out the show. Another fantastic set where I think we're going to hopefully have a good week of bets, even though we kind of agree a lot and that makes me nervous. But regardless, it's going to be fun. As always, check out all the shows on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. This Sunday, first episode of the banner show of the network, For Fantasy Sake. DJ and the boys, not sure who's going to be on this. I don't think it'll be Doug, but it'll be somebody. we'll be joining them. Even if you listen long enough and hear it close till the end, you'll even hear me. I sent them over my NFL picks for the weekend, my four best bets. So, For Fantasy Sake, from 10 to 11:30 on Sunday morning. Man, full weekend of football, high school Friday, NFL Thursday, high school Friday, college Saturday, NFL Sunday and Monday. Man, we're back. I'm excited. Let's get it on. Right around the hook. Breakdown of the Rams-Bills Thursday night game. You know what it is. It was a party. Enjoyed watching that. And got to see Big 17 have himself a night. We have ourselves a night every night on the pod, so we're enjoying. Buckle up, folks. You know how we roll. It's the Educated Ignorance Podcast coming at you. All right. Well, that was something, wasn't it? I mean, what a performance by the Buffalo Bills. And listen, this is going to be a moment for me to kind of pat my own back. I basically called it. We'll get to that. There's going to be some dunking on national media folk here in a little while, but that's fine. But there are a lot of layers to this game, and there are a lot of ways people can overreact. I don't want you to overreact, but I think what is smart in week one is understanding what you see, and as long as you can legitimately take positive and negatives from that in a matter that can attain to the entire season of football if those things can continue, can be consistently done, or are consistently done in a negative or positive way, I think those are proper reactions. I think people coming after tonight and obviously saying the Bills are going to go 20-0, that's nuts. But if you think, if you were going into tonight as someone that had the Bills as you're the best team in the league, like I did, someone who I would say is the favorites to win, in my opinion, they're my Super Bowl favorite. Now, I will say this. Everyone on earth, outside of like four or five people, saying they're the favorites to win the Super Bowl, like picking them to win the Super Bowl is bold, especially in this league where there's about 10 teams at least that you could name that I could see being in the Final Four or winning it all. Like, it's just tough for me to think that everyone had the same conclusion. But tonight's certainly going to back it up, man. I mean, that was about as flawless of a game, other than a few things, than I've seen for week one. If it wasn't for the turnovers, I mean, the Bills didn't punt. Again, they did punt. They turned the ball over four times. Two picks, two fumbles, and the field goal. The only time the night that they didn't get a third down conversion, they it's hilarious. They freaking kicked the field goal. They were sadistic on third down. They were sadistic all game. And a couple, if it weren't for a couple weird, like a weird bounce on that pick, they were driving in the first quarter or to end the first quarter. And Dax Hill made a ridiculously good play to pick off Allen in the second. If it weren't for those two plays, man, that game could have gotten frosty by the end of the first half. It could have been 31-10 at half. The game could have easily been 52-10, like because the Rams weren't stopping them. They just weren't. All right, let's start with this. Josh Allen, man. All right, here's where I'm at when it comes to the quarterback hierarchy. I did a little bullshit quarterback tier this year, or about a month ago. I got it right here. I'm going to pull it up. And on top, let's see, it had, here we go, NFL quarterback pyramid. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 tiers on it for a lot of quarterbacks. I have pretty much three in the top tier to an extent. I had, at the time, I put King, I wanted to have someone at the top, so I put, gun to my head, I put the King of the Hill, Josh Allen. I am also someone who definitely believes that Justin Herbert is the best quarterback alive, and he is right there. But I feel like Herbert, Allen, and Mahomes, there's nobody that is playing as good as those dudes right now in the world. Joe Burrow could eventually, if he can continue, this year could be a year for him where it's like, all right, he's up there when it comes to the top five. I think Deshaun Watson is a top five level QB. When he's out there playing, we just haven't seen him play in so long, and we won't see him play for another 3 months, so I'm sticking with those dudes. Josh Allen tonight was a freak show. I think he finished 21 for 26 or something like that for 297, four touchdowns, had the rushing three touchdowns through the air, had the rushing touchdown. The throws he's making, the on time, the on target, the zip that he has on the ball, the ball placement he has been on another level since about week 14 last year. Ever since they had that game, that Monday night game at home that was against the Patriots, and it was basically a freaking winter storm minus the snow. The wind was 60-something miles an hour in Buffalo. And ever since that game they lost, they pummeled teams last year before they got bounced in the divisional round. He was spectacular, and he was spectacular tonight. Listen, man, what I said the other night was this Bills team coming in, and I'm surprised this wasn't a narrative that was mentioned. That should have been, they started the season in the same arena that they should have been crowned world champions last year if it wasn't for 13 seconds. if it was not for 13 seconds of a mental lapse of bad defense, they beat the Chiefs. I think they beat the Bengals, and then I believe they would have beaten the Rams last year. The Bills should be the defending Super Bowl champions, but they're not because they weren't able to finish the job. And the reason I think that they're going to have the best record in the league this year is because I think, like I said the other night, those games where they just goof and they screw up, like the games, the Jags game last year, like that first Patriots game, like the Steelers game, I don't think they're going to have those this season. I think they're going to be able to win those games that they should and handle their business. Tonight was just dominant, man. It was dominant, and Allen was terrific. I want to also mention on their defense, because their D-line last year was good. And a lot of people said how last year's defense was very, the numbers were good, but they were better than the eye test because they are quarterback level they play. Now, listen, that is true, but they got a lot of superstars on that defense, man. Like, a lot, they're really deep up front, and we'll get to those guys. But then you got guys like Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, Trey White last year. He's hurt. He'll be back in about a month. And then, of course, I think they have the best safety duo in the league in Poyer and Hyde. That's two all-pro level guys, man, and you have them at your safety positions. Like, people don't realize how loaded this defense is. So I think that you can really make that argument of the quarterbacks thing with a lot of teams in the NFL. But then it gets one of those things, too. It's like you can't go both ways and say how many good quarterbacks are in the league, blah, 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 whatever. Listen, I just believe that the Bills' defense last year was pretty good. It was bad in certain spots, and it cost them. Tonight it was great, and mainly because of how good they were up front. And Von Miller was a game wrecker. The contract's ridiculous. People are going to be like, oh, we overpaid. They overpaid him. But if you actually understand how NFL contracts work, that is going to be a fantastic deal over time. And their defensive line now, having an absolute unit like him, they've got guys. Ed Oliver is a superstar. Hopefully he's okay. He was kind of in and out of the game after the first quarter. Jordan Phillips had a really good night. A.J. Epinesa on the DN, great at the edge rusher. Gregory Rousseau. All of those things allow Matt Milano to then funnel back to the linebacker position instead of having to be kind of an edge guy, which he was at points last season. Their defense is really, really good. The craziest thing is how they were able to be so dominant tonight without their top corner in Trey White. Now, and they didn't play Kyir Elam too much. But we'll see. That'll be one thing. If there is a weakness on this roster, it's probably at the corner position because they're just not deep. But I feel like Elam's really good. The other rookie they started tonight, they trust him a lot. And I think that Trey White's obviously all-pro, an all-pro level corner. So when he's back, it kind of levels things out. But, yeah, man, this was an epic performance, and I'm excited to see how far this team continues to go. Lastly, on the Bills, casuals were worried about the Brian Daboll thing. Listen, man, Ken Dorsey showed tonight that they are going to be just fine. The formations they were running, I loved the stuff they were running, that they continue to run with. You have two true X receivers in Diggs and Davis, so you can also have Diggs go to the slot and move Knox outside. You have two other high-level type of guys that are going to, like, valuable, I shouldn't say high-level, but valued slot receivers. You lose Cole Beasley, but you bring Jamison Crowder in, who I think is solid, and Isaiah McKenzie this year could have a really good year. And Gabe Davis, too. He's going to be a guy where I think he's overvalued when you look at, like, fantasy football and stuff, but I don't like talking fantasy football. I talk about real football. Davis is going to put up a lot of stupid touchdown numbers this year, I don't think he's going to have the game like he had against any games where he had against the Chiefs, where he just kind of was the man. And because they tried taking Diggs away, Diggs is going to be the dude when it comes to targets. But Gabe Davis is going to be a touchdown hawk for them this season. And I think Isaiah McKenzie could be a frisky guy like that as well. But I love the tempo they played with, the formations that they're able to use, because the formations they're able to use as well, they don't have to sit out here. They can do, they can bring in a fullback and go inside, outside. They can pull guards. They can run zones. They can run with the ball with Allen. Then they can dial it up, quick passes. Their momentum was so efficient tonight. The Bills finally hit that deep ball to Davis in the third, and it was kind of like, damn, that was the first time we've seen them really air it out tonight. The Rams, that was the first time the Rams really gave them a look that allowed them to go deep. The Bills were doing a great job of dicing their way down the field, and it was so efficient. It was so efficient. And Dorsey, I thought, was great. And the biggest thing for them, people have always been, and me as well, have been cautious of their run game. Tonight it was good enough. It was good enough, and at times it was really good, because there were plays where I thought Devin Singletary was really, really good tonight. Now, I could do without the fumbles from James Cook and from Zach Moss. Clean the turnover stuff up, and you'll be fine. I think there are just a couple weird bounces and some fumbles, but hey, they've turned the ball over four times, and they still won by fucking 21, so... Just imagine, again, if they didn't, this game would have been hideous. But running the ball tonight, Allen was their leading rusher, and that's something that I don't want to be a theme, but as long as they can have him be safe with it, I'm okay. Because he can be a threat where linebackers are just terrified. He's the main running threat to where the linebackers are just in a position where things can't settle in one way or another. But I thought Singletary did a good job tonight running the ball. I think he had 8 for about 46. And I really thought the balance that they had, if they can run just enough, if they can float between 70 to 100 rushing yards in a game, that's where this offense is just, it's like, how do you stop it? Because Allen is going to deal. And as long as they protect the football and protect Allen, that's where this team really, it's like, how on earth do you put this team away? We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about the Rams on the other. This episode is brought to you by The Corner Tap. Who doesn't need a solid handcuff on their fantasy squad? Grab a bite to eat at Clint's Draft House while watching the noon games, and then head on over across the Moline Rock Island border to the Corner Tap for some libations during the 3 o'clock games. Every Sunday is fun day at the Corner Tap with $3 tall boys, Bloody Marys, Jack Daniels, and $2 PBR drafts. Head into the Corner Tap, 4018 14th Avenue, Rock Island, and get into the end zone. All right, I want to talk about the Rams because this was brutal. The main thing I'm worried about with them is their offensive line tonight got absolutely bullied. Josh Allen obviously was the best player on the field. The worst unit in this game was the offensive line for the Rams. It was concerning that they were getting pushed around that much. Now, obviously, the Bills D-line, man, it's no joke. They've got 7 dudes at least that are NFL like top tier guys, and they were pushing them around. They had, other than a few plays here or there, they couldn't run the ball consistently. Stafford got sacked 7 times tonight. Now listen, that the reason the Bills are so tough is because if you can balance things out on offense, it makes Allen so dangerous. And when you can get elite, this D-line is so good, they can pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. They did it the entire game. They were up 10-0, and then they were able to pin their ears back from the start. They got up early in the second half, and they were able to continue to do the same. Couple huge drive-stopping plays. Like, in that second half, Von Miller made some big-time plays. He had The first drive of the night for the Rams, he stopped at midfield on a sack. And right after the Bills got the ball to start the third, or in the third, they went right down and scored. And then the Rams were driving, and then Miller had another huge sack to stifle the Rams' momentum. It seemed like any time they needed a big play on a second down pass or a third down, that D-line was getting home. And Stafford struggled tonight. Now, one of the things offensively for them that is going to be interesting to try to see how it works throughout the year is the Allen Robinson situation. Now, Stafford didn't really do much the entire preseason because of the elbow injury. And Robinson didn't get much time with him. And they barely got any reps. And I think that mattered. Now, I know people, mainly Bears fans, are going to want to just believe Allen Robinson's cooked. But I thought Robinson didn't do anything bad. Like, there were a couple plays tonight where I could spot Robinson just kind of running open down the middle of the field on a crosser. And Stafford wasn't even looking his way. They need to get Robinson involved, and that will be a huge factor for the Rams because, listen, it obviously when Robert Woods went down, it proved how badly they needed Odell last year, and Odell was sensational. But when Odell got hurt in the Super Bowl, man, it was bad. They moved the ball at will when Odell was in the lineup, and then when Odell got hurt, they didn't move the ball for 2+ hours until that final drive. They need to get another receiver to be able, because here's the thing. Teams are going to live with just making sure that Cup doesn't burn him deep. Also, they could get Van Jefferson back too. That would be huge because he's a guy that you can line up in the slot to make some stuff happen. But they don't have a guy right now that they have A-Rob, but there's just no chemistry there. And hopefully over time for them, that is something that can settle in, and they're going to need it in order to be as good as we think they were. It was interesting tonight that Daryl Henderson was RB1 over Cam Akers. I'm not too sure about that, so over time I'm sure we'll see what that was about, but it wouldn't have mattered regardless. They weren't able to get anything going in the run game. I do believe the Rams are going to be okay in the long term. I just think that there's some concerning things that they need to fix, mainly the O-line, and then secondly, that connection with Allen Robinson. Because again, like I said, man, they just need that second receiver. And once Odell went down, remember, once Odell went down in that Super Bowl, man, they didn't move the ball. And it took everything that they could get with Stafford and Kupp and all of his greatness from Cooper Kupp last year in order for them to win that game and win a championship. They need that secondary receiver and that third receiver. Because again, the point I was trying to make was, teams are going to be like, listen, we're just going to make sure that you can't nail us in one, like you can't get a 50-yard chunk on us and then set yourself up with, you know, in the red area and the entire width of the field to be able to roll on us. That's how the Rams like to do things. If you make them have to snap it 10, 12 times because they're not able to get chunk plays, that's where this is going to hurt them, the lack of explosiveness, because Kupp can only do so much. And he was awesome tonight. He had, what, like 12, 13 catches for over 100 yards? I mean, Kupp at worst is, what, the fourth, fifth best receiver in the NFL right now? It's ridiculous. He might be the second best. Might be the best. It's ridiculous what he's done, what he's been doing. And tonight he was, like, we were talking in the group chat tonight. Like, would it be surprising if Cooper Kupp had 200 receptions this year? Because until they figure this out with Robinson, they get Van Jefferson back. Like, Kupp's going to have 18 targets a game, 12-plus catches. That's just what's going to happen. But teams are going to be okay with that because most likely they're going to be playing in a situation where, yeah, you might give up a big play every now and then to where they get a first down, but you're never going to do something to get you absolutely burnt. Where, not saying, and this isn't a Cooper Kupp can't burn you deep thing because he can. It's just more of a teams are going to be more conservative because there's less weapons on the field, so they're going to be able to allow certain things and take certain things away. So yeah, those are my takeaways from this game. Fantastic opening night. Great to have the league back. Bills made a statement, man. Look, this team's for real, and this team is as good as people think they are, and it's going to be interesting to see this year to see who can match their level of play, because I think that they are definitely poised for a special season. We'll have the Sinister Six with Mac next, after this, a word here from our sponsors, Educated Ignorance Pod on the For Frequency Sake QC Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island. With baseball playoffs right around the corner, over a month away, and the NFL and college football seasons right on our tail, it's the perfect time of year to get your daily fantasy sports life in order. For Frequency's Sake has you covered every single week. Tune in to For Frequency's Sake's DFS Deep Dive on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch every Friday evening, and uploaded every Saturday morning on your favorite podcast platform, where Brian and the boys will be giving you the best daily fantasy sports advice for each and every week to help you fatten your wallet this season. Again, on every Friday night live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch, and of course, uploaded on your favorite podcast platform on Saturday mornings. DFS advice, DFS deep dive here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Sinister Six, week two. We are on the precipice of week one of the NFL season. We have we are off the heels, or whatever the saying is, of the official week one of the college football season. Football is back, America is back, and Mac is back. Second week of Sinister Six. Mac, last week you took it on the chin. You are more winging it this week, so you're probably going to go 6-0. How does that make you feel?
Honestly, that's why I'm winging it. I need to have that 6-0 in me. Last week was definitely a rough one, but if we were actually adding an over and under into one of those, I would probably have two wins instead of one. So
yes, I do believe. Let me find it. So we both went over for App State UNC, and the over hit in the fourth quarter alone.
That's crazy to say.
But it's awesome. Let's see. You went over. No, you did not. No. Yeah, even your over unders were. You went under or in the Oregon Georgia game.
Yeah. Wasn't it 53.5 and they only just got 40? It was 52.
52. Yeah, that almost could have been a horrific beat, but it was not. Shout out to Georgia.
But I got the under right though.
You did.
There you go. At least I got that right in that game.
We both lost Georgia. Yeah, exactly. I tried to tell you. We both lost Georgia. We both won on Notre Dame covering. We both lost Utah. I had under, which was correct. Mac was over. Slight miss. We both missed on Houston, which, I mean, UTSA was on the right side all game, so I'm not mad about that. The over, if people had the under in that game, that's a pretty horrific beat because of the OTs. So, you know, overtime is not good for the underbetter. Anywho, we're back. So I went 3-3 last week. Mac went 1-5. We're back for a new slate. 6 games, and we're ready to roll. Shall we begin, mister?
Let's do it.
Are you confident in this week's slate?
Yes, I am more confident than I am last week. Just because 3 NFL games helps me out a little bit.
Okay. That we do. We have these 6 bets. Let's get it started. We're going to start. We have 3-3 this week split up, which will usually be the case. Sometimes if it's a week, college week, we'll hammer 4 NFL games. That'll be the case. And this is the week where we kind of really frame into best bets and a combination of good games. So there's going to be like an NFL game on here that isn't going to be the most watchable game in the world. I'll watch it because I'm a psychopath, and I'll have Red Zone fired up. But it's also my favorite bet of the week. I think all three of these college games are watchable, and the other two NFL games are watchable. There are a couple NFL games that just missed the cut, like Bears-Niners. I really think Bears plus 7.5 is a steal, but that's just me. I might be one of five people alive who think that, but I've been calling that for a month and a half, and I called it when the line was 1 point less than what it is now. There's probably some other ones out there. We initially had Cardinals-Chiefs, but I just don't think that line is really enticing as it was about 2 months ago.
So my logic was that we're going to get first half Kyler and not second half Kyler, so that game is going to be a lot closer, and I think it could go either way on that. That's why I kind of threw it out there.
I'm with you. But we ditched that for what I think are going to be the best bet of the weekend, and then two, I think, really good games on Sunday. There's some other games as well, like Bucks-Cowboys, which is a good game to bet. The line at one point for that game was like 5, and I was like, I've been fading the Bucks. So I was like, even though I feel like the Cowboys, I'm a little fading them too, I'd be more fading the Bucks, but now it's at 2, so that's tough. That's kind of stay-away territory. So those games missed the cut. College games that missed the cut, I think the only real notable one is Bama-Texas. So before we get into it, let me ask you this. Does Texas have anything that they can do to stay within the 20 against Bama on Saturday morning?
Oof. I mean, I think the big thing that Texas has to do against Alabama is they have to control the football. You have to ride your workhorse and Bijan Robinson. And, I mean, he has to have a day of, like, his best career day. But if you don't control the ball and Bama starts getting it, this game's going to be over, and it's going to be way over 20.
I think there's a world that a 56-35 type game is a win for Texas if it's close and then it just kind of gets away late. I think a win for Texas is competent offense, and Quinn Ewers looks like the real deal.
So, as a selfish football fan, I would love this game to be like a remake of what LSU Texas was a few years back. Is that going to happen? Probably not. But I can wish, right?
Yeah, no. That Texas team was much better than this Texas team. Even though I think Texas is close, I think Texas' ceiling is higher than that one over the next few years. But this year right now, it's still like they're just so young. So young.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but it'll be fun. I'll be watched. All right, let's actually get into it. 2:30 slate on Saturday. Tennessee on the road, 24th-ranked Tennessee on the road, 17th-ranked Pittsburgh. Line is Tennessee minus 6.5, so the Panthers at home are catching a touchdown in the hook, over under 66.5.
Tennessee is the dog.
No. I thought it was
FanDuel yesterday had it as 6.5 Tennessee dogs.
Let me double check this then on what I saw. I could have swore I saw Tennessee was favored, but maybe I'm drunk. I very well could be drunk. This could be a Sinister Six drunk moment. No, it's Tennessee minus 6.5. I knew I was right.
FanDuel was wrong yesterday when I looked at it.
So, yeah. Because I'm not on – I mean, it's –
all right. Either way, it works.
It's on the – like, I got this from ESPN just because that was the easiest thing to look at because I deleted the FanDuel app. But, yeah, it's Tennessee minus 6.5. There's no way it's a 12-point difference on FanDuel.
Well, I probably read it wrong, but that's what I thought it said.
So the Pitt Panthers catching 6.5 at home. At home, I love Tennessee's offense, but this is way too much. This is easily the best bet of the college weekend. If Tennessee wins this game by more than a touchdown, then I think something drastically wrong happened. I would almost even say, like, you could bet this Pitt money line, I wouldn't be shocked if Pittsburgh won, because if Pat, the only thing, Mac, that's going to stand in their way is Pat Narduzzi not letting Keaton Slovis cook, which very well could happen because Pat Narduzzi's a knob. If it doesn't happen, I mean, Tennessee's defense is horrific, so I really like what they could do here. 6.5 Pittsburgh all the way at home. The over is probably the play, but I'm going to stay away from that. But I think Pittsburgh catching a touchdown and the hook at home is stupid. So that is automatic for me.
Yeah, I think this game is going to be probably the most cool. I think it's going to be the closest game on the schedule this week. I think 6.5 is just way too much, like, to give Pittsburgh. They looked very good in the backyard brawl against West Virginia last week. I think they're only going to get better going forward. And I think their money line, you hammer the money line here.
So you're hammering Pitt money line. So you're taking Pitt 6.5.
Yeah.
6.5. I'll even put money line in parentheses for you. Which one?
I think over 66.5 too.
And you're taking the OVA, OVER. Mac is
just
taking
I'm just thinking there's going to be no defense in this game. It's going to be, I think it's going to be similar to what we saw on Thursday night with the M2 playing, you know, with West Virginia and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh up front isn't great, especially their O-line, but Tennessee's defense is bad. So, yeah, it could very well be like 45-42. All right, moving up, SEC game, a big one. Florida, after the upset win on Saturday, staying in the swamp. 4.5-point favorites against the Kentucky Wildcats. Over-under at 51.5. McKenzie, is this the perfect week to fade Florida? Big emotional win. All the players and the campus are probably still drunk. Doesn't this feel like a big week to fade Florida and the points?
I feel like if you're out there trying to find a game to bet, I wouldn't touch this game personally. But the line is, being that it's 4.5, I think this game's gonna be right around there, about, you know, field goal to a touchdown game. Florida does have the advantage that they don't have to go on the road. Being in Gainesville, we saw, you know, saw it cause problems with Utah last week. But Florida's gonna, like, for Florida to win this game, I think it's gonna come down to quarterback play. They are gonna have, I think, in my mind, they have the second, not the best quarterback on the field for this game, behind Will Levis in Kentucky. So it's just going to come down to how well Florida's quarterback play compares to Kentucky. I think Kentucky wins as the dog, and I'm taking the over at 51.5.
Kentucky +4.5. And
jeez, 40. If you're giving me 45 points, I'm taking that any day.
+4.5 and the over. Yeah, me too. I think it's the perfect week to fade Florida. This is the type of game they lose after winning a big emotional game. Maybe this is the week people stop thinking Anthony Richardson is a future NFL Hall of Famer. Florida, big fade. Kentucky +4.5. Signed, sealed, delivered. All right. Third of the three college games. Baylor catching 3.5 on the road. Top 10 team, taking on number 21 BYU. It makes sense why Baylor is underdogs here. BYU is a sexy, sexy pick. Over under 53.5. Mac, this is definitely week two must win for a group of five in Baylor. It's an outside chance that they could get in. But if they want to even think about that, which they're probably not, but if there's any stone opportunity for them to get in, this, you cannot lose this game if you're the Baylor if you're BYU.
I don't know, dude. I think if BYU does slip up today, on Saturday, look at this, okay? Look at their schedule going forward. They have Oregon next week, Notre Dame October 8th, you have Arkansas, you have Boise State, and you have Stanford on your schedule. I think there's a realistic mindset. If you are BYU, this game isn't make or break for you.
Well, my thing is one loss group of five, especially not in a conference
That's the issue. They aren't a group of five, though. If we're going to consider Notre Dame a power five and they don't have a conference, we have to consider BYU the same because they play a tougher schedule than Notre Dame.
Their BYU schedule this year is nuts, which is why if they did run the table, it would be hard to keep them out.
Exactly.
Which is why I'm saying I feel like they have to run the table. Like, here's the thing.
I just don't agree. I don't agree. I mean,
I'm just saying
there's so many opportunities they can win.
Okay, I guess if it could very well come down, if let's say they lost Saturday and then won out, that means they would have knocked off Notre Dame.
Arkansas, Boise State, and Stanford.
So, yes, even though the Boise State and Stanford games I don't think carry much water, especially Boise State, they look bad on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
But I get what you're saying.
Brand thing.
So, if they did do that, then, okay, you got a point. I'm just trying to say, like, all right, one loss them versus one loss, like, USC or Oklahoma. Like, it's going to be hard for BYU to get in. Undefeated BYU with who they've beaten, that's what I'm saying. Winning every game is much better for them than a slip up. Though, with all that said, I do have them winning. I do have them covering. Not many favorites I'm taking this week, which I think might bite me in the ass, but I have them 3 in the hook. I think they'll win. I just feel like they'll probably be more equipped in this, you know, I think Baylor is good. They got a solid defense, but what is Baylor's offense going to be? I love Dave Aranda and what they got at Baylor, but I just, you know, BYU at home, electric atmosphere, give me the Cougs. Mac, you're up.
I am with you. I think one being that it's in Provo, I think it's going to be huge for BYU. This is BYU team's very, very balanced this year. And we're still trying to figure out what really is Baylor this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they only played Albany. So like, we don't really have a good gauge of like what they're going to be. And like, at least BYU went on the road Saturday and played USF, even though USF's not like a power five or anything, it's still better competition. They went on the road and they got tested a little bit and they put up a pretty strong performance. I think I have BYU winning. 3.5 is just, you know, ludicrous. That's the line for this game in my head. And it's over 53.5.
Do you think it should be? What do you think it should be then?
Honestly, I think in my head it would be ranging from a coin flip to about 3-point favorites for BYU. So, I mean, it isn't a big move, but in the betting scheme, it's actually a massive move.
That's fair. So, but you are taking BYU -3.5.
+3.5. -3.5.
Max drunk. All right.
That's my fault.
No, you're fine. And you took the over?
Yes.
Mac is taking the overs. I'm actually going to go under here. I think that this definitely has like a 24-20 type game. So I'm going to go underville in this one. Okay. It is NFL time. It is time for my favorite bet of the week. Sound the alarms because this is absolute juice. And I heard it on the way home from Chicago Monday and I pissed myself. I was like, this is a legit line. Holy shit, I'd bet $1,000 on it if I could. The Jacksonville Jaguars on the road against the Washington Commanders, and the Jags are catching 2 and the hook. Over-under is 43.5. Let me make my point here for why I'm so excited for this. Obviously, I'm hammering Jags +2.5. You're asking why, I'll give it to you. Well, Chase Young's not going to play, so that is a big thing. The biggest reasons are this. First off, this is probably one of maybe 5 at most games the Commanders are going to be favored in all year. You think maybe this, the two Giants games. They play the Bears this year. There's not going to be many more. The Commanders, I don't think, are that good. Second off, that new car smell for the Jags. Even though I faded their under, and I really regret it, it's the one I'm really worried about the most that's going to miss. I feel like it's going to be a big week for the Jags. It's going to be that first date with your new girlfriend, and it's like, oh, wow, I want to marry you. We just hung out for the first time. I love you. Let's have babies today. I feel like it's going to be one of those types of games for the Jags. I know you're probably thinking, the Jags, dogs on the road, why are you doing this? I understand it's not the smartest play in the world historically, but I think that this could be a watershed moment for the Jags, and a lot of people think that this team has playoff ambitions or at least frisky 500 ambitions. If any of that, Mac, is going to happen, they have to win this game. Like, even if you guys want your overs to hit on the Jags, this is about, not must win, but this is pretty damn close. This is my favorite bet of the weekend. Jags plus 2.5 on the road in Washington. Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me, give it to me. Or what is it in Aria, the Respect song? Sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me. Baby, give it to me. Jags plus 2.5 all day, every day. We're riding on this one.
I mean, you kind of just took everything what I was going to say, man. I think this bet, NFL-wise, is the absolute no-brainer if you're looking to make a play in the NFL this weekend. 2.5 on a team. You're giving 2.5 points to a team who has a massive, and I mean massive, quarterback advantage going in. We're talking about Trevor Lawrence versus Carson Wentz.
Well, what do you think that there could be some Carson Wentz? This is the Carson Wentz revenge game, bro, against Dougie T?
No.
Come on, man.
I think Trevor Lawrence is gonna make that next step, because last year wasn't great for him, which is fine because it's gonna be growing pains as a first year player.
Well, this
you don't have the turmoil that you had with Urban Meyer and all that stuff either.
There's going to be a Netflix Untold documentary about that season.
So,
like, Urban Meyer is probably the worst coach in NFL history.
I mean, I can't argue there.
It was such a mess.
So Trevor Lawrence is going to make that next step. He has a lot of stability now in the coaching staff and for office. As much as, like, again, we don't like what Doug Peterson did in Philly at the end of his tenure there, he's still a very good coach and won them a Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
So him being in Jacksonville, I think Jacksonville, yes, they brought in some guys on the outside to help Trevor Lawrence. They had a solid draft. There's going to be a lot of key pieces coming in. I think they're gonna win. They're going to cover. Then they're going to hit the over on this game.
Okay, so you're going to hit over as well. I'm just going to take the points. Over-unders for the NFL are hard for me.
I mean, this in my logic here is, like, if you get a game that's 24-20 or 27-21, you got the over right there.
That's fair. That is fair. It is a very low total. All right, next one up. Probably my second favorite game Sunday. Chargers, Raiders in the large Wi-Fi hotspot, SoFi Stadium. Chargers, 3.5-point favorites, over under 52.5. I loved this until I found out the line moved from 3 to 3.5. That makes it rough. So I'm worried about I'm on the wrong side here, regardless. But
just telling you this right now, it moved back to 3.
Really?
Yeah, ESPN has it at -3 right now.
Yeah, but you said on FanDuel it was -3.5, so I'm going to go with 3.5. I'm going to say Raiders plus 3.5, and I hate it because I love the Chargers. Here's the thing. People forget, Mac, that the Raiders added 2 blue-chip players this year in the offseason. Like, they added 2 of the 40 best players in the league.
I mean, you could say the same thing about the Chargers doing what they did this offseason.
Yes, absolutely. But I don't think they added anyone. No, I get it. I did. But I don't think they added anyone as good as Devontae Adams this year, because I don't think Mac is up that high right now.
Okay, nobody's going to match what Davante Adams is. But if you're looking for a defensive game changer,
yeah,
I mean, Khalil Mack's the best guy out there.
Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson. No, you're right. I agree. The problem with me for the Raiders is their defense is so grossly inept. So that's why it's like a part of me is nervous that I took their under, but it's also like that, and they're going to have that positive, like that luck regression, like it's going to go down compared to last year. Like last year, they had so many crazy close games that they won. Like that variance is going to hit them right in the nuts. Though I think this is a close game and they cover the 3.5. And I feel, here's the thing. The only thing, I said it in my Elite Eight pod the other day. The only thing standing in the way of the Chargers is the Chargers. I think the Chargers win, but give me the Raiders to cover. This is going to be like 27-24, 30-27 type game. Probably the over. But again, I kind of refrain from NFL over-unders. The only reason I have the Raiders is because of the 3.5. But that's where I'm at. Your floor.
I get where you're coming from here. You gotta remember this game, I think, has a little bit more meaning for the Chargers than it would any other year. Just look back last season at the end of the year. Who was the team that kept the Chargers out of the playoffs?
The Raiders.
The Raiders. So this is, I think they have a little chip on their shoulder going into this year, the Chargers do. They added really good talent on the defensive side of the ball. Justin Herbert is by far easily at least a top four quarterback in the NFL, arguably a top two.
Yeah. Least top three. Bro, the 325 slate on Sunday is fucking stupid.
It is. It really is.
Raiders, Chargers, the next game we got coming up on the Sinister Six. Fucking Chiefs, Cardinals, goddamn.
And then you have Packers, Vikings, and Giants, Titans. Which that game, like the teams aren't great, but that's going to be a very good game in my mind.
Maybe people keep talking nice things about the Giants, and then I have to be like, you know, they employ Daniel Jones, right? Like they suck.
I think we're tangenting here, but I think the Giants are as good as healthy as Saquon Barkley is. So I think if Saquon Barkley's healthy, he's going to be good. They're going to be fine. But back to the Chargers, I think the Chargers have too much firepower, and I can argue that the Chargers probably have the best top 22 players on any roster.
1,000%. So this was their issue last year. This was their issue last year. And by the way, I'm glad we finally fucking disagreed on something. So I was getting nervous. I thought we were going to disagree on the Kentucky-Florida game. But we didn't. Okay, the problem last year for the Chargers was 1 to 10, like on their roster, was probably better than anyone's. But then from 11 to 52, fucking sucked. And this year they finally mopped up the edges a lot, and I think they got a lot much better depth. It's not perfect, but like if you go through their roster, there's 20 to 30 blue chip level or blue chip or red chip players on their team. Like it's really good. Again, the only thing that's going to stand in their way is the fact that they're the Chargers. And hopefully Brandon Staley can figure some stuff out from last year where he, again, like the Chiefs Thursday night game, they win if Staley isn't a knob. There's a couple moments like that. The only thing I'm worried about that they didn't really touch up on was the linebacker position because they had the worst linebacker room in the league last year. If that can just be a little bit better, that'll help because they add on the D-line, they add in the secondary. And I said it in the Elite Eight, too, because I think I had them fourth. I went, what did I go? Listen to the podcast if you haven't yet, you morons. But by the time this comes out, we're recording this Wednesday, as always. By the time this comes out, I mean, it'll be Friday and more people have listened to it. I went Bills, Chiefs, Rams, Chargers, top four. So, if the only thing that worries me about the Chargers is like they don't have a speedster, like that's why I wanted them to get like Jamo Williams in the draft, because if they could add a dude like that, that can game break them.
I think you can argue that how they use Austin Ekeler kind of fills that void.
Well, I'm talking like a slot receiver. That's what I'm talking.
I know, but like they use Ekeler in the slot a lot.
Yeah, but he's not fucking beating dude 70 yards downfield waiting for Justin Herbert to put the ball in his lap. I'm just saying,
but you,
maybe Jordan Palmer could be that way for them.
I understand what you're saying here. I think that is the issue. They're a similar situation to what the Bucs are in as well. They don't have the speed on the outside that they need like other teams do.
No, the Bucs' biggest problem, the Bucs' biggest problem also is their guard-center-guard combo with Jensen out for the year
that's ass.
And that's
another issue, but I'm saying on the outside, that's a major issue that Bucs face, and we saw it last year in the playoffs, especially.
Yeah, they had nobody that could get separation.
Exactly. So, but I'm going to finish here. Chargers, -3.5. I think it's going to be like a 34-28 game or 35-28. I'm not touching the over-under on this game because we never know with these two teams.
Max out here living life by the light, or living life by the PMT model. Life's too short to bet the unders.
I don't trust these teams with that.
All right. A lot of games that could have been in the prime spot. The last game we usually put on here is always going to be, in my mind, the game of the week in the NFL. Because it's the game of the week of the entire weekend. As much as we love college football and NFL, the sixth spot on the Sinister Six block is the game of the week. You could easily put Raiders Chargers on here. Very well.
I was going to say that. We literally have two games of the week, and they just happen to be 5 and 6.
Another game in that slot, in that 3:25 slot on Sunday, very well could be on here. That Chiefs Cardinals game. It's going to be fun to watch. That Sunday night game, Bucks-Dallas, it's probably going to be a train wreck, but it could very well be here. But it is not. None of those games are as important as the game that is going to take place in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Sunday afternoon. Green Bay going to Minnesota. There's never been maybe a more important Week 1 game ever. I don't think people are hinting at that enough. Like, for what we think the Vikings could be, like what certain people believe they could be, especially what I think they could be.
For the two of us think they could be.
This absolutely is as important of a game as it could be for both of these teams, just because it's in Minnesota. If it was in Green Bay, it wouldn't be as, like, crazy big, because if Minnesota was to lose it, it would be like, all right, that you have, you know, you still get them at home, and there's 16 games left. But if you lose the one at home, it's like, shit, that's tough. And for Green Bay, it would be like, all right, we come in here without Devontae, like no receivers. We're kind of figuring some shit out, and we find a way to win against everyone's darling NFC North pick. So that would be huge for Green Bay. Mac, I'll start with you. Where are you leaning? How are you looking at this game? Are you with me on the importance of it, even though it's week one?
So the first thing I'm going to say here is I think for us, because you and I both are the same on the Vikings, we're very high on them this year.
Hey, you didn't have the you didn't have the balls to put them as the number one seed like I did.
I said they're going to win the division, though.
Yeah, but I said number one seed. I said 13-4, baby. Top seed in the NFC.
What I'm saying here is this game means so much for the division, because the moment you beat Green Bay, if you're the Vikings, you're a game and a half up going into that division because you have the tiebreaker.
Yep.
So I think the fact that it's -1.5 for the Green Bay, I think it is.
Yeah, Green Bay. Sorry, yeah, I didn't say
minus
that.
-1.5 for the Packers.
Green Bay is 1.5 point favorites, and the over-under is 47. Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah, so I was just making sure because ESPN's been off on a couple of them, so I just wanted to confirm there. I think the Vikings at minus, like being dogs at 1.5. I think the Vikings are going to win this game. I think they're a better team overall this year. I think the Packers, I think a lot of people are viewing the Packers as the same old every year. This team is not as good as they were. Their receiving core is trash compared to what it was. I mean, losing Devontae Adams might be the biggest loss that Aaron Rodgers has to face in his career.
So it cuts a couple ways with Green Bay. I feel like there's a chance they're gonna evolve, because I think they very well could have two of the 10 to 12 best running backs in the league, because I think A.J. Dillon's a dude. But I'm with you on this. I also have Vikings +1.5. So here's my thing about Green Bay, and I was saying it the other day. I did put Green Bay in my initial Elite Eight and not Minnesota, just because, like, I wasn't going to, like, put what I feel projections were going into it. So I was a little off. I also feel like my preseason lead eight may have been a little bit wonky, but I feel like I did make good points on where I had some teams. So you're right with Green Bay, and this is what I've been saying. It's like, you can't tell me that skill players matter, wide receivers matter right now in this league, like they do, and then you have moves like Green Bay and Kansas City had happen, and then tell me that doesn't, like, it's okay. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm even argue here, like, when you're talking about that, I don't think you can even compare Kansas City to what Green Bay did. Green Bay did nothing to address their wide receiver room. At least Kansas City tried to fill the holes with, like, Juju Smith-Schuster and MBS.
True.
They tried.
That's fair. Now, I like the two guys that they got coming in. I love Romeo Doubs from Nevada. I think Christian Watson could be good for North Dakota State. I like the rookies they got in. I just think this is going to be a different style of offense from Green Bay this year, and it's going to help Aaron be more efficient and conservative, and they won't have to worry about throwing as much. But you're right, I do like, here's my thing with the Vikings, why I'm so high on them. It's because you have, well, I said this, I wasn't kidding, losing Zimmer and getting O'Connell, who's not, we don't even know how good of a coach he is, but losing Zimmer in general is at least +2 in the win category. Zimmer was horrible last year.
One, that, and you're bringing in an offensive-minded coach for Kirk Cousins.
Yes.
And we already saw what Kirk Cousins did last year, and he didn't get enough respect for what he did.
No, he was really good. His numbers last year were really good. I think Justin Jefferson's going to have a ridiculous year. People forget Adam Thielen is, like, awesome, and all he does is catch big touchdowns and whatnot. I think Thielen's going to have a really good year. Dalvin Cook's going to have a really good year. I think this offense, even though Nick, like, a big point Nick had when I was talking about the Vikings, like, their defense has some holes, yes, but I think this offense is going to be so much more efficient this season.
So I'm just going to touch on the fact with Adam Thielen. I have been, every draft that we've done in fantasy football this year, I have been baffled by the fact that he's been going so well.
And it has, like, been pretty crazy.
This guy is going to be a game changer this year, and he might have the same or very close to the number of grabs that Justin Jefferson has this year.
Could be. I think he's going to have more of the touchdown production, but I do believe, like, Justin Jefferson absolutely is fantasy wide receiver one.
Oh, absolutely. This year. He might be the best receiver in the league right now. Like him, Ja'Marr Chase, and, I mean, like, those guys are special.
I think
they're only
Adams.
Yeah, you know, they're still so young.
Yeah,
I think Cooper Kupp's there too, but, like.
Mm-hmm. I think Adams, Chase, Jefferson, Cup, that's the top four at least. And then maybe, like, people hate him for some reason, but Mike Evans is probably, like, fifth. That's probably what I would have, like, top five in the league right now.
I agree with you there. But, yeah, I think overall, I mean, like, this Vikings team, again, there's a lot of unknowns bringing in O'Connell as the head coach. But, again, you're bringing in an offensive-minded coach, and that I agree, it has to be worth it. Win.
Addition by subtraction, baby. That matters in this league. And yeah, again, people fucking despised Zimmer by the end of the that run. It was just, look, man, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. So Vikings +1.5. That's where I'm at. I really feel like that, like, this will be a huge moment for Minnesota if they can pull off the win. And I believe that they're going to. That's
if you want a tight game to watch on Sunday, that's the game to watch. Like, this game is going to be a bloodbath, I think.
I think it's going to be the best game of the weekend. That's for sure. So to recap, man, we're going to both be really good or really bad. But hey, at worst, you're only gaining either I'm up 3 games or you've cut the lead in half. So not terrible. Pittsburgh +6.5 over Tennessee. We both have Kentucky catching 4.5 in the swamp. We both have BYU winning -3.5. We both are plays of the week. Jags +2.5 on the road against the Commanders. I have the Raiders plus 3.5 in L.A. against the Chargers. Mac has the Chargers minus the points. And then we both have the Vikings pretty much both winning. It's probably I haven't looked at the numbers, but it's probably better just to bet Vikings money line than Vikings plus 1.5.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably better off doing – if you're going to bet plus 1.5, you might as well bet the money line.
Look, man, I'm at this point in, like, if you're willing to give me 1.5 points to bet on the Vikings there, I'm taking that any day of the week.
Exactly.
Because there's just too many weapons, and that offense is going to be phenomenal.
Because there's a chance where if the Vikings are as good as we both think they are, and this game was being played in about – in, like, week 8 in Minnesota – it would be like Vikings minus like 2 or 3.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
So absolute value in the Vikings plus 1.5, and we both think the Vikings are really good. All right. We did this shorter in time this week too, which is nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to catch the start of Dynamite.
And then we also got another draft coming up.
We have a fantasy draft in a half hour with a four.
And I'm currently in a draft right now. So it's like, what's going on here, guys?
America is back, bro. It is football. All right, buddy. Thanks.
Amen.
Hey, thanks as always, my friend.
Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill in Moline and Davenport. Chase away your Sunday scaries at Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill this season. Located in the Belgium neighborhood of 7th Street in Moline, Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill is home to some of the Quad City's best food and drink specials. On Sunday, there's no better place to be. Clint's is serving up 75-cent wings and $4 Bloody Marys all day. And is your favorite team playing in those out-of-market games? Well, you'll never miss a second of the action on one of their 10 screens with NFL Sunday Ticket. And after you've had your wing and bloody fix, finish off your football watching experience with one of their famous Quad City style pop pizzas. And folks, they know pizza. They've been spinning QC style pies for the last 22 years. So make Clint's part of your Sunday football routine. Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill, 7th Street in Moline. And also, Clint is now serving up their famous pizza and fried chicken on the Iowa side of the river as well. Clint's Pizza House and Chicken opens up daily at 4 p.m. so everyone in the Quad Cities can enjoy their QC-style pizza and Henny Penny fried chicken. That's Clint Pizza House and Chicken, 7th Street Moline, and 1601 West 3rd Street in Davenport. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. All right, big shouts to Mac Fulton, as always, every Wednesday we record, Thursday for the Sinister Six pod. Thank you for listening. As always, you know what to do. Go to anywhere you listen to these podcasts, give it a like, tell a friend, as always, that's what we like to do. To tell you to do it or whatnot. Just tell one person that you think would enjoy this. Goes a long way. Tell them to tell one person. All that fun stuff. Like any post you see this on. That would honestly be a huge, huge, huge thing that we would appreciate. Comment anything you have. Questions or those types of things. We will read them out on the air. We would love to be interactive with the people that listen to the show. So we thank you very much. Until next time, we will see you guys on Sunday night, Monday morning, for the Sunday night football recap and Sunday day game, or the Sunday games. That Bucks-Cowboys game will be very interesting to talk about for Sunday night purposes. And, the Sunday games. Can't wait for NFL Sunday. I'm ready to roll. Red Zone's juiced. Watch the Bears back at it. So many loaded games. I'm excited. All right. We'll see you guys on Sunday. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, we are out. Remember, as always, if you ain't got the games, you best pass the six. We are out. Peace.